This episode is brought to you by the online, on-demand workshop, Take Up Space, a workshop on boundaries, self-worth, and strengthening your relationship with self. I just saw this image. It's going pretty viral on Facebook right now, and it's just a picture of a piece of paper that says, "What do boundaries feel like?" And then there's 9 statements on the page. It is not my job to fix others. It is okay if others get angry. It is okay to say no. It is not my job to take responsibility for others. I don't have to anticipate the needs of others. It is my job to make me happy. Nobody has to agree with me. I have a right to my own feelings. I am enough. And that just speaks so beautifully to my new online workshop, Take Up Space. Boundaries are something that I am still trying so hard to learn and master and navigate and practice. And I know so many of you out there struggle with wanting to share a need or a desire and being worried about what someone else's feelings are going to be. And so you silence yourself, or you struggle to say no when you really don't want to do something, but you feel obligated, especially with family or coworkers or friends. This workshop is all about confronting those stories, finding new ways forward, and learning how to take up more space in both gentle and fierce ways. If you want to sign up for the workshop, it's all online, on demand. There's 10 lessons. You can grab it for $37, and there's a link in the show notes. On with the show.
You're listening to
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
Sex Gets Real.
With Dawn Sarah.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hello, lovely listeners. I am so excited to talk to you this week. Next week, I am going to be in Portland, Oregon, for Be Nourished's Body Trust Weekend Intensive. I am ridiculously excited to not only head down to Portland for a couple of days and to get a chance to see some rad folks, but to get to spend a weekend really learning how to develop body trust and how to rewrite some of the stories that I have about my body. I think it's going to be really rich and nourishing and wonderful, so I can't wait to tell you all about it. I'm also going back to Portland in early August for the ASDA conference, which is the Association for Size, Diversity, and Health conference. A whole bunch of rad people are going to be there, so there's some wonderful body stuff coming up, which is good because one of the emails that I have today is all about bodies and fat phobia. We've also got some awesome stuff about intersex relationships or intersex language and resentment, and also some relationship stuff that I've been going through because, you know, I try to keep it as real and vulnerable as I can. For Patreon supporters, if you support at the $3 level and above, you get weekly bonus content. And this week, I am going to tell you all about this brand new consent game I just got. I backed them on Kickstarter about a year ago, and the game is called Consenticle, and it arrived yesterday. Alex and I had a chance to play it a little bit, and there's actually a lot more to the game that we still have to play and try out, but I am going to share a little bit about the game, a little bit about our experiences, the sexy places that we talked about taking it, and kind of give you a little bit of behind the scenes of this awesome game, plus a couple of other little tidbits. So if you want to support the show, you can go to patreon.com/sexgetsreal, and you can do that there. So supporters, thank you so much for helping me to keep this thing going, and your little behind the scenes bonus is waiting over there for you. So this week, I've got some fun stuff for everybody. I've been lining up all kinds of interviews, but I just am kind of feeling like I've been on a roll this summer with answering lots of your questions. So I want to kind of keep that going because I am slowly making my way through the massive backlog of all of your questions. Somebody posted recently on Facebook about resentment, and I've been thinking about resentment a lot. I talk about it with a lot of the people who come through my coaching practice, because resentment shows up in a lot of really interesting ways. And it's just so common in relationships when things start to get a little bit tough or a little uncomfortable, for resentment to start eking in. And it's a very seductive thing, because the alternative to feeling resentment and the discomfort of it is the discomfort of actually doing something different. And, you know, Brené Brown has this great quote of, I'd rather step into discomfort than resentment. And I think that's such a beautiful encapsulation of what resentment can look like. So one of the things that I talk about with couples who come through my coaching practice is, if passive aggressive behaviors show up, that's usually a sign that there's some resentment going on. If there's a lot of sarcasm and a lot of cutting remarks, the passive aggressiveness, something inside is not being heard or witnessed or expressed, and that's leading to resentment, which a lot of us then turn into kind of this mean, biting humor. So resentment is really, what am I not saying? Which is something that Carmen Kuhl, who's a really rad activist that I follow online, said she asks herself. And I think another question is, what hasn't been witnessed in this other person or by this other person that needs to be seen? So resentment comes from a place of, I feel like I'm not being heard. I feel like I can't express myself. I feel like I'm not being understood. And so I'm either not saying the thing, or I'm expecting the other person to just get it without me saying the thing. And often there's a fear that comes with that, of if I say the thing, then they might reject me, then our relationship might change, then all kinds of scary things are going to happen. So instead of actually saying the thing, we kind of keep it inside of ourselves and let it fester, and then that starts to breed resentment. And we start finding a lack of generosity towards this person in our life, where all the little things that they do start to really irritate us, where things that they've done for since we've known them suddenly feel much bigger or much harder than they were. Those are all signs of resentment. And I know it's shown up for me in so many different places, family, friends, work, lovers. It's a way of just really, okay, I am feeling some resentment, or I'm starting to get passive aggressive. I'm starting to be less generous. So what in me is not getting seen? What in me isn't being expressed or is feeling stifled and suffocated? And usually as soon as those things get spoken about or confronted, the resentment dissolves. And often behind that comes grief or sadness. But it just really got me thinking when Carmen posted about this a couple of days ago, because so many people commented on her thread that they struggle with resentment too, and that resentment for them is absolutely a red flag that they're being avoidant. And so I just kind of wanted to mention it here, you know, for anyone listening who has noticed some kind of like low-grade resentment starting to bubble up, either in your own behavior or in the behavior of someone you love towards you, it's probably a sign that something isn't being said, or that something has been said and it hasn't been heard, and that you've been trying and something isn't changing. So something needs to be done differently. So I just invite all of us to kind of sit here and think, where am I tolerating something? Because what you're tolerating that you don't really want to be tolerating is often where we're going to start breeding resentment. I was looking at how to make yogurt last night. And so I'm just kind of thinking about like these live cultures, you know, like all the things that we're tolerating are these live cultures that are just going to kind of like keep breeding until we get something that's like resentment. Something else that I saw that was super cool on social media, I'm going to post a link, and this actually kind of contributes a little bit to one of the questions that I got. Interact is an intersex advocacy group that does amazing work. And if you aren't familiar with Interact, I highly recommend you check them out. But somebody took a screenshot of a PDF that they have that's all about speaking up for intersex folks and being more inclusive in our language. And it's so rad. I will include a link in the show notes so that you can check this out, but I'm just going to run through a couple of the tidbits, because You know, I'm always looking for ways to level up, and I know many of you are as well. So instead of saying biological sex or biological gender, Interact recommends saying sex traits, because people are born with sex traits, including chromosomes, genitals, reproductive organs, but that may not line up neatly into what most people think of as one, quote unquote, biological sex. Gender, of course, is social and cultural. We talk about that all the time on the show. And someone's gender may not correspond with their bodily sex traits. Although, you know, as in our culture, we often consider sex traits and gender the same thing. So instead of saying biological sex or biological gender, Interact is recommending that we say sex traits. Instead of saying born both a man and a woman, which is pretty dated language, they want us to, of course, say born intersex or born with different sex traits. And that's because intersex folks are as common as redheads. So as many people who really, really, really love to insist that there's only two biological sexes, whatever that means, it's blatantly false and has been forever. Instead of saying female chromosomes or male chromosomes, they recommend XX chromosomes and XY chromosomes because, of course, chromosomes don't have a gender. They just have a presentation. And so we need to call parts what they are without gendering them. And this goes for trans and non-binary folks as well as intersex folks, because some intersex folks can have XY chromosomes and vulvas, and some people can have XX chromosomes and gonads. So our bodies do delicious things, and they're so, so rich in variety, and we just don't see that because we try to force everything into the binary. And of course, this one, you know, instead of saying female genitalia or male genitalia, really getting specific about the genitals that you're talking about. So vulva, vagina, penis, testicles. And then you've heard on the show other guests talking about assigned male or assigned female at birth versus born a boy or born a girl. And that is where the listener question is going to take us. So I'll jump in just a second. But I want all of us to be thinking about the fact that intersex folks are as common as redheads. So every time you see a redhead, think, whoa, that kind of represents someone around us who is intersex in some way. And the more that we can be inclusive in our thoughts and in our language, the less we are to cause violence and harms to other people. There is a tremendous amount of violence towards intersex individuals, especially by the medical community. So the more we can all level up and do better by making our language and our hearts more inclusive, the more that we can advocate for others and use our privilege and our power in ways that help rather than hurt. So if you want to check out this handout that Interact made, they've got all kinds of really awesome things about like terms to know and terms to avoid and points that to emphasize if you really want to learn about intersex issues, and then a whole bunch of hashtags that you can follow if you want to learn more about intersex advocacy and issues. I will link to that in the show notes, so be sure to check it out. So this takes me to an email that I got from Enrique, which says, definition, explanation. Hi, Dawn. Love the podcast and appreciate what you do. As a new listener trying to catch up with past episodes, can you please define what a cis man woman is? I think there's a few different terms like that, and I would guess a few of us could benefit from a little education. Great question, Enrique. This is something that comes up a lot for people who are kind of new to the sex positivity movement or who are from a country or a culture outside of the United States, in Canada. So great question. So you're probably familiar with the phrase trans, and cis is essentially just the opposite of trans. It's kind of the not trans word. And, cis is a shortening of cisgender, which means that people's gender identity, the way they feel, matches the sex that they were assigned at birth. So when you were born, if the doctor looked down at your genitals and screamed, "It's a boy," and you've moved through life feeling like a boy and like a man, then that would mean you're cis. If you have any kind of different experience of gender and body, then that's usually coined as trans or transgender or gender nonconforming or somewhere on the gender variant spectrum. There's all kinds of delicious words that we're developing that help to give us more nuance and understanding. But cis just means not trans. It means that the way you move through the world is basically the way that everyone around you expects you to move through the world, because nobody ever asked you what kind of gender you felt. They just looked at the genitals between your legs when you were a wee little baby and decided they knew for you what you would feel like when you grew up and who you would feel like being, which is rather assumptive, but there it is. So whether you identify as a man or a woman, if that matches what people yelled out about your genitals when you were born, then essentially that's what cis means. And that comes with a whole bunch of privilege in our culture. Everyone assumes everyone else is cis. That's one of the definitions of privilege in our culture. So most people don't assume the person next to them is trans or gender nonconforming. Most people just assume everyone around them is cis until otherwise proven something else. And so again, that's some cis privilege there, where you get to just kind of move through the world assuming everyone is like you. So thank you for asking the question, Enrique. I know there's lots of people out there who probably had that same question, and I appreciate the opportunity for us to all level up and learn new language together. I got this email from someone who wants to remain anonymous. It's a little bit long, and it's about anal sex and pain, so let's see where we go. Hi, I'm very new to your podcast, but I've been looking for something to help me understand a few things better, and your show is very open, so I thought maybe you would have some good advice. My boyfriend of 9 years wants to have anal really bad. We tried it about 5 years ago, and we didn't really know what we were doing. We didn't use enough lube, and it hurt me like crazy. After it was over, I ran into the bathtub and put my ass underwater immediately. It felt like my asshole had turned inside out. I have since developed a hemorrhoid and can't stand anything touching my anus. How can I overcome this fear of being in bad pain from my hemorrhoid? I never felt pleasure from my anus. Every time he tries to put something in it, I don't like it. It just turns me off immediately when he even starts talking about it. He wants to do this more than anything, so I want to be working towards getting to that point, but just the thought of it makes me want to cry. I've had feelings like I wish I could just get it over with so he'll leave me alone, because it's literally all he talks about, nonstop, when we're alone. I'm tired of hearing about it. I like vaginal intercourse, but that hurts me too. I get little tears at the base between my vaginal hole and anus. It always rips a little. I used to get yeast infections and bladder infections really easily, so sex in general just isn't very pleasurable for me. I've also only had a few orgasms that I've known of. I don't exactly know when I'm having one, and now he's also super obsessed with trying to make me come every time. I just seem to disappoint him. Sex is now stressful, and all I do is avoid thinking about it until I go home to have him bombard me with stupid jokes or try to flirt in order to get me to be aroused, which doesn't really happen. We were both virgins and have only been with each other. I am submissive and enjoy missionary and things that don't rip and aren't painful, but he wants to be adventurous and wants me to come up with more playful things in the bedroom. I was abused as a 3-year-old by a male babysitter, and it's affected me my whole life. I also used to be anorexic, so I have a very bad body image. I want to change. I want to feel comfortable in bed with the man I love, but I think he's a lot freakier than me and wants to try a lot of other stuff. And I don't even know where to start. Please help. I was thinking maybe some type of sex counseling would help, but I don't even know where to begin. Thank you in advance. You're pretty inspiring being so open, and I really want you to know that I really want to know how you think I should take my sex life back and be in control and enjoy my body. Love your show. It's so helpful for people like me. Ugh, anonymous. This is such a heartbreaking email, and I'm so sorry you're going through all of this. The first thing that I want to say is you never, ever owe your boyfriend sex. Never. And if he's pressuring you to have sex and sex is painful and you're not enjoying it, then you don't have to keep doing it. And he might feel disappointed. He might get angry. He might threaten to leave. And he might actually leave. And those are all his choices. But you get to say no. You don't owe him sex. It doesn't make you a bad girlfriend. It doesn't make you a bad person. It doesn't make you broken. It doesn't make you a failure in any way. It's you taking care of you and prioritizing your pleasure. And pleasure is not sex right now. So I just want to start with that. He can want anal sex all he wants to, but you don't have to give him access to your ass. And he can want intercourse all he wants to. And you know what? You don't have to do that either. You also get to say, I don't want to talk about this. These jokes aren't okay. I'm not feeling turned on right now. I need you to stop talking about this for at least the next couple of months because I'm working through some stuff and this is bringing me a lot of distress and it feels really terrible. So that's where I want to start. I would highly recommend setting some pretty firm boundaries around the ways that he is approaching sex with you and the ways that he's putting this pressure on you. It's unacceptable. He should be able to say, I'd really like to do this thing. And if you say, I'm really not into that right now, things are hurting, my body's not agreeing, and it's just not on the table, then he should be able to say, thank you so much for taking care of you. And maybe we can revisit this in a couple of months. And that should be the end of it. He shouldn't be talking about it every day. He shouldn't be bringing it up. That's frankly, in my book, abusive and deeply manipulative. So I want to just give you that permission. You can say, no more talking about this. We can circle back in a couple months and see how my body is feeling, but no more comments, no more jokes, no more hinting, and no more acting like a shit if I say no and take care of me. And the same around sex. You shouldn't be dreading going home because he's going to bombard you with stupid jokes and flirting, knowing that he only wants to get sex out of you. You're not a vending machine. You're a human. So what would make going home feel wonderful? What things, what behaviors and changes would help you to feel nurtured and seen and loved and help take some of this pressure off? If it's letting him know, hey, when I get home, here's what I really need. And when he shares jokes that feel yucky or when he starts trying to pressure you into sex, being able to really say, this is what I'm talking about. This doesn't feel fun or good for me. And if you need to go masturbate or you need to go watch some porn or we need to do something else that feels really connective, great. But you don't have to go home feeling like you owe him something that's going to cause you pain. I also just want to say I'm really sorry that you experienced abuse so early in life and that you've struggled with anorexia. Those are both hard things for many people. And I think that finding ways to give yourself some compassion and finding other people who can help give you some compassion, like a really skilled therapist or counselor, could be tremendous. Because I think what I'm hearing too is I just need to be listened to and understood. So let's talk a little bit about the sex. If you're tearing during intercourse, then that tells me two things. Either you're not fully aroused, or the things that are being done to you just don't work for your body. So if you're not fully aroused, if your tissue isn't fully engorged, which for some people who have vulvas can take anywhere from 10, 20 to 45 minutes to really get fully engorged and fully aroused and feeling totally throbby and turned on and delicious, all of that happening before anything goes inside you is a way to help ensure that your body is actually ready to be penetrated. Our bodies are capable of tremendous stretching and growth with all this blood that rushes to our genitals when we're super turned on. And that helps to prevent things like bladder infections and urinary tract infections and tearing. But we have to be getting to that fully aroused place. Some people choose to have sex when they're not fully aroused because they like that little bit of ouch and that little bit of control that comes with it. But that's a deliberate choice. And everything you shared in your email is that this is not fun for you. It hurts. You don't like the ripping and the tearing. And so one of the things I would recommend is take vaginal intercourse completely off the table. Give your body a chance to just feel at peace and to not feel hurt and torn and in pain. You can have amazing, delicious sex with hands and mouths and toys. It doesn't have to involve anything at all with your vulva or your ass. If he has problems with that, that's for him to work through, not you. Your number one goal, like I said at the very top of the show when I was talking about the Take Up Space workshop, which also might be a really good one for you around setting boundaries, is you're responsible for making you happy and you're responsible for taking care of your body. And then if he has problems with that, then he has to go deal with those feelings. You don't have to carry them for him or make them better. I would also highly recommend the book Women's Anatomy of Arousal by Sherry Winston. It's a really great book that talks all about the tissues and the ways that the tissues engorge during arousal, cues that a body is actually ready to be penetrated. There's cues that our bodies give that say, oh yeah, I'm ready now. And oftentimes we don't give ourselves enough time to really get warmed up, to really get to a place where our bodies are hungry for something. And then that's where a lot of pain can come in, which then leads to a lot of shame and all sorts of other things. Now, around your hemorrhoid, a couple of thoughts. One, have you been to a doctor? Have they offered you any kind of treatment for it? They might recommend a hemorrhoid surgery to remove it, depending on how big it is. They might also recommend some shrinking creams. You can also buy over-the-counter creams and wipes that help to just keep the area from getting super inflamed, and that can help a lot. So start there. Get your body to a place where pain is minimized, where you feel good about it, where you feel like, okay, I've really taken care of me and things are feeling good. That's just all you have to do. You don't have to give your butt to anybody. No matter how much he wants it, you don't owe him your butt. That is not what being in a relationship with another human being is about. It's not transactional. So do what you can to just take care of your ass. Minimize the hemorrhoid, minimize the pain, and just feel good about your butt. Something else to keep in mind is you can have amazing anal sex without anything ever going inside your ass. You can have someone massage your ass cheeks and massage around your asshole or touch it gently or tickle it gently. And depending on how your ass feels and the sensitivity of your hemorrhoid, that might feel really great or it might not. Something else that I've found just from personal experience, because I have experienced something similar to you, is if I get really, really aroused, maybe I've had like, I don't know, a couple of chances with a toy and I'm feeling really yummy and all the blood is coursing and I'm really, really turned on. And then someone gently starts massaging my ass. That can feel amazing. And you don't ever have to go inside. If you do want to do anything internal, then I recommend a single finger and nothing more. Many times. And then once a single finger, many times, feels safe and comfortable and normal and like, oh yeah, I totally got this. This feels good. Then maybe you go to two fingers and you do that many times. And maybe you use a butt plug that's a similar size and you get like a dildo that's really, really narrow. Giving yourself the opportunity to very, very, very slowly retrain your body that ass play can be pleasurable is crucial because anal should never hurt. If anal hurts, then you stop. That's the golden rule for butt stuff. So if a finger hurts, if touching the outside with lots of lube and a really gentle touch hurts, stop. No more. We're not going any further. That's it. Let's do other sexy things. If that feels good and you do it a couple of times and you can kind of relax into that, then you take the next tiny step and then the next tiny step. For some people's bodies, they will never get to a place where they can take a cock, depending on the size of the cock. For some people's bodies, it takes lots and lots of warm-up and lots of clitoral stimulation and lots of practice with many, many, many other things before you get to the cock. And even with the cock, you know, for me personally, I have to have like a vibe on my clit in order to be able to do any kind of like internal anal play. That's the only way that I can get that to be pleasurable for me. And then once we get going, I can stop with the clit stimulation, but the butt stuff without the clit stimulation, no go for my body. So everybody's built a little bit differently, and you get to experiment if you want to with how to do that. But I think the number one takeaway, what I'm hearing here, is your boyfriend is terrible at thinking about your boundaries, at listening to your needs, at trusting your where you are, at believing your pain. That's shitty. And you deserve way better. I mean, 9 years of this, you should not feel guilty about having a hemorrhoid and having a butt that just doesn't want penetration. You should not feel guilty about not wanting to have sex because it's rarely pleasurable for you. You can rewrite those stories and you can find ways to explore pleasure and to experience pleasure on your own terms, in your body, exactly as it is. But that's a journey that has to come from a place of curiosity and delight, not pressure and expectation. So I would definitely recommend getting either a sex counselor or a sex coach. I do sex coaching. So if you're looking for some one-on-one support, you can go to donsara.com. There's a work with me page. But I think it has to start with you setting some really clear boundaries. He cannot pester you for anal anymore. He cannot pester you and joke and try and manipulate and coerce you into sex when you come home anymore. This has to be a mutually enjoyable experience. And if it's not enjoyable for you, it might be uncomfortable to tell him no. He might be disappointed. He might be frustrated. He might feel lots of things. There's all kinds of other activities that he can do that one, offers him sexual pleasure, and two, connects the two of you, that doesn't have anything to do with your genitals and you being in pain. So I would recommend to you, listener, get some support to help you set these boundaries. Because what I'm hearing is a deeply unhealthy relationship dynamic that's leaving you wanting to cry and feeling stressed and not wanting to go home and unsure of how to advocate for yourself and putting your body through things that cause it damage. No one should ever be in that position. So I know that's not the easiest thing to hear. Take some time, really evaluate what your needs are, what your body is capable of, and then do the best that you can to advocate from that place. Or even have your boyfriend listen to this episode so that the two of you can talk about it. But I think you need to get some professional support to help you find your voice, to help you get creative around your pleasure, to help you find some trust and some delight in your body. And that might mean telling your boyfriend no sex, no intercourse, no butt stuff, nothing for the next couple of months while I work through this at a minimum. And then find other ways to play. And if he's not open to that, that gives you all the information you know about what kind of a relationship he wants from you, which is not one that's mutually beneficial and not one that cares about your pleasure. I'm so sorry you're going through this. I know you're not alone, and I know that it can feel so embarrassing and shameful, but you deserve way more than this. So take care of you and write back with an update if you have one at any point. Thank you so much, listener. It's really interesting, you know, doing this show without Dylan. I miss Dylan so much, and Dylan just had a big 5-0 birthday party. So I will wish Dylan happy birthday from all of you. I've loved the direction the show has gone over the past year of interviewing such incredible leaders, and I've grown so much personally and professionally that, you know, we've been having much different conversations than we did at the beginning of the show. And some of you have stuck with us through that and some of you haven't, and that's all okay. But the one thing that I miss about having a cohort, in addition to just Dylan's amazingness, is, you know, sharing of myself has become a little bit more difficult. It's hard for me to just sit here and talk about my stuff without somebody else to react and to interact with and to share as well. It's kind of a weird thing to just speak out into the ether, you know, unprompted about stuff. So I haven't shared as much about me in the last year as I did, you know, especially in that the beginning part of the podcast with Dylan. So I just wanted to share a little bit about something that I've been through in the past couple of weeks that's very personal. And it's just to kind of demonstrate that no matter who you are, no matter how skilled you are, no matter what kind of relationships you're in, no matter how much love is there, sometimes things are just tough. So Alex and I have had some very personal conversations over the past couple of weeks, and there have been big feelings. I've done a lot of crying. I've done a lot of advocating for myself in new ways. The other night, I said something that it's very rare for me to say to people in my life, which is, I am really angry. Because expressing my anger is something that is very difficult for me. I grew up in a house where anger was not a safe thing to express or to feel. And so I'm still finding my voice around my anger in a lot of ways. And it felt really good to actually say those words and to be able to stand in them powerfully. But I'll admit, I spent a couple of hours trying to kind of talk myself out of the anger and trying to ignore it. And then I kind of realized, no, I'm allowed to be mad. This hurts. And I need to express that. And I did. And the world didn't fall apart. And, you know, we had some intense conversations that were not easy. And thankfully, I had therapy the day that we had one of our conversations, and my therapist was so beautifully supportive and offered me so much insight and permission around the things that I was struggling with and coming to terms with, and really validated my feelings and witnessed me in such powerful ways. And the reason I share that is because I think in our culture, we tend to romanticize relationships and turn our backs on some of the more difficult stuff that come with being in relationship with other human beings. It's not always easy. People fuck up. People make mistakes. People say the wrong things. People have big feelings that they don't share until it's way later than, you know, when they initially had the feeling, and hello, resentment. And then we say things we don't mean that hurt other people. And part of being in relationship is finding ways to navigate those often painful places, and to do so with as much generosity as you can and as much honesty as you can. And hopefully you come out the other side having learned more about each other and having practiced some skills, which also means being really awkward at them. And it's really easy to talk about feeling awkward and standing in uncertainty. It's another thing to actually feel fucking awkward and to be swimming in uncertainty. And so I just want to acknowledge that, you know, a lot of the advice that I give on this show comes from research and from other experts that I've talked to. And some of it also does genuinely come from the fact that, just like you, I struggle with so many of the things that you write in with. You know, sometimes I don't feel like having sex. Sometimes orgasms aren't easy. Sometimes I don't advocate for myself. Sometimes I don't say the scary thing. Sometimes I say things really badly and I hurt somebody's feelings. I'm constantly learning and practicing and growing. And thankfully, I have many people in my life who are generous and believe that I'm coming from a good place when I make mistakes. And I also believe that of the people in my life, that even if they say something that really, really hurts, and even if they say something that speaks to my deepest, deepest insecurities and wounds, there's a part of me that also knows they're doing their best and we can work through this, even if it feels scary, even if I'm not sure. So I just wanted to share a little bit about that. You know, I'm really proud of having sat in some tough places, and I'm sure there will be more tough places in the weeks, months, and years, decades to come. But getting to really express my anger was new, and having a therapist who just, so gets it and is so generous in witnessing me has made such a difference. So to all of you who are listening, if you don't have a therapist and you have the means and the resources and the access to one, oh God, I can't recommend it enough. And it might take some shopping around, but when you find a good one, everything changes. It's incredible. So I want to use that to kind of segue into this next listener email, because therapy is a part of the question and a part of the answer. So I got this question from, let me just make sure I'm allowed to say this person's name. Yeah. Okay. So I'm pretty sure I can say Kate's name. So Kate wrote in and it says, "My body is not the problem. Hi, Dawn. I'm a new listener to your show. I absolutely love your content, and I'm so glad I found you thanks to your recent interview on another favorite podcast of mine, Food Psych. Shout out to Christy Harrison. I'm a mom of two, married to my husband for 9 years, and we've been together for 11. I have always been fat. I'm in a fat body. I always have been, and I always will be. Yes, I've gone up and down the scale, and I have had some thin privilege in my mid-20s thanks to some extreme exercising and a 60-day stint living in the woods, hiking 10 miles per day. But what I'm saying is that in order for my body to fit into the oppressive norms for women's bodies to be considered good, I am foregoing my own body autonomy and living in order to please others. So cut to many years later, a long body positivity journey, understanding it through a lens of what I was working hard to be, which is an intersectional feminist, peppered with a strong yoga practice, and I am in love with my beautiful self." All caps. The catch? My husband is not. He recently told me he was less sexually attracted to me because I am, quote unquote, too fat, and behaved in an insensitive and oppressively mean fashion. We are going to marriage counseling and have made some strides. I honestly feel like our marriage can and will weather this storm, but I am not going to be working to change my body in any way to please him. I need him to understand why he values me more sexually when I am smaller, and why that is in part influenced by toxic patriarchal ideas of what women should look like. He is a self-proclaimed feminist, but this is a huge disconnect. We have hot, passionate, sexy time sex. We are curious and into trying new things, toys, positions, but I can't help but be confused and not turned on by the fact that he has expressed this and felt this way. Please help. I'm hoping that you might have some ideas about how to help him unpack his fat phobia in a loving way. I love him very much and want our sex life to continue to grow and be a loving, intimate place of pleasure, discovery, and growth, pun intended. Thanks for all you do. You're changing lives and helping people all over the world. With love, Kate." First of all, Kate, I love how clear you are that your body is not the problem, because it's not. Not in any way, shape, or form. So the fact that you're really clear on that is beautiful. And thank you for people like Christy Harrison, who put content out into the world and to help all of us to really unpack fat phobia and diet culture and finding our ways towards loving and accepting and just even existing in our bodies the way that they are. So good on you. I also want to say I'm really sorry that your husband expressed that to you. That's deeply hurtful and really not okay. And my first thought was, you know, to share with you what I want to share. But I decided to reach out to a couple of friends of mine who are therapists and who work in the space, and they also had some thoughts that were very similar to mine. So, you know, I'll just kind of wrap it all up in a little bow for you. So the first is Gina Senarighi, who's been on the show a couple of times, said, "I would plain out call bullshit on that claim. Anything that's quote unquote too blank anymore, when that hasn't really changed, is usually a scapegoat or an easy target." And she hopes that your couple's counselor calls that out, because either the too fat or the fatness never bothered you before and something has shifted in you that now it bothers you now, or you've been harboring resentment this whole time, which is both unfair and speaks to a communication issue, nothing to do with weight or size. So that's what Gina said. And that was exactly what I was going to say to you. I interestingly, timing, a couple of days ago was speaking with a friend of mine who for years, really believed that the reason that she didn't really like her husband and wasn't sure she wanted to stay married to her husband and wasn't enjoying sex with her husband was because the story she was telling herself was that he was just too fat. And that if he would just lose weight, then all these other things would be fine. Since that time, a lot of things have changed for her. But one of the things that she's realized is that that was exactly what Gina said, a scapegoat. It was easier to blame his fatness than to come to terms with the fact that she actually really didn't like him anymore. She didn't want to be married to him anymore. She didn't want to share a life with him anymore after, you know, kids and decades. It's a lot harder to say, there's this thing that's not working for me, than it is to just say, well, you know, if you lost weight and you were thin, because we, you know, culturally are just taught to do that. I know I'm still trying to unlearn that habit of, man, maybe this would be easier on me if I was just thin. Maybe I wouldn't be so anxious. Maybe XYZ wouldn't happen if I could just lose weight. But, you know, my therapist would also call bullshit on that for me, you know, because I have people in my life who have been thin their entire lives and they've had more surgeries than me and have had more anxiety or deeper depressions, all kinds of things. But it's easy to use weight as the scapegoat. So that would be my guess. My guess is there's something that your husband is feeling resentful about that has gone unspoken, that hasn't been acknowledged, and he either doesn't have the language for it or he's too scared to share it. And so saying you're too fat and he's not attracted to you is his way of blaming something that has absolutely nothing to do with his levels of happiness or attractiveness and more to do with what he isn't willing to say or hasn't found the language for yet. Sarah Thompson is a blogger who went through Be Nourished's Body Trust program. You might be familiar if you follow all the body positivity, fat activism folks online. Sarah Thompson is very active in sharing resources and thoughts about fat phobia and diet culture. And Sarah said that her blog next week is on this very topic. So I've asked her to pass along a link to her blog. And as soon as I get that, I'll tweet that out. So keep an eye on Twitter for that. But Sarah Thompson, who is Body Trust certified with Be Nourished, if you haven't found her on Instagram or social media, check her out, because her blog next week is about this very thing, about partners who start using that, well, you're too fat to have sex with or to find attractive anymore or, you know, whatever those other things are. So I just want to offer to you one, I love how clear you are about your body. As far as helping him to unpack his fat phobia, you can't do the work for him. You can give him resources, but unless he is really willing to do the work, it's just going to be lip service. So what I would recommend is that he hire a coach or a body trust therapist to help him really do this work, because he has to choose it for himself and he's going to have to confront some real big stories. If this is truly fat phobia related, my guess is that it's not. But he still has to do the work. Listening to Christy Harrison's show together, listening to Summer Innan's Fearless Rebel Radio podcast together, reading Melissa Toller's blog together, reading Sarah Thompson's blog together, or checking out the conference lineup for the ASDA conference, the Association for Size, Diversity, and Health conference that's at the beginning of August. There are so many leaders in this space there who probably have awesome resources that the two of you could dive into together. And also encouraging him to fill his world and his feed with body diversity, whether it's following Be Nourished and Add to Positivity and Chubster or getting books like Curvy Girl Sex and Big, Big Love. It takes active, ongoing, constant work to continue to confront diet culture and fat phobia and fat bias. It's not one and done. It's not, I did this work for a little while and that's it, because it's constantly morphing and changing itself. If he's not willing to do that work, and if he's not clear about why he's using this as a scapegoat, then this problem is probably going to just keep coming up. So hopefully your couple's therapist is helping you to kind of zero in on that, because the issue is not your body. And if your therapist can't articulate to that point, then I would recommend getting a different therapist who can, or a therapist who specializes in that. And then I also recommend, Kate, you. If you don't have a personal individual therapist or coach, get one. Having a place where you can really process around your needs, your boundaries, your wants, how you want to be seen and held in the relationship, how you want to be treated, and really grieving and mourning and grappling with maybe the things that your husband is or is not willing to do in this space is crucial, and it's not something that you should have to do alone. So I hope that you get more support for you. I hope that you do whatever you need to do to keep that clarity around how your body is totally not the problem. And I hope more than anything that you really sit with what Gina said, which is it has nothing at all to do with your fat body and with whatever he is scapegoating around. You know, what isn't he articulating? What is he feeling insecure about? What is he struggling with? And this is just the easy thing to blame. So thank you so much for listening and for tuning in. I love that you love Christy Harrison, and I love that you're listening to the show. I want more people who are super on the train of fighting against diet culture and being fat activists, because, ugh, what an amazing space to be in. Thank you so much, Kate, and feel free to write back with an update when you have one. And of course, I will share Sarah Thompson's blog on social media. So check Twitter, follow the show, Sex Gets Real on Twitter, and I'll share that. Or you can follow me on Twitter. I'm way more active on my personal Twitter, which is Dawn_Sarah. I share way more resources over there. So I'll share Sarah's blog as it comes out. So be sure to go to sexgetsreal.com for this episode to get the link to the Interact Intersex document that I shared. Also, I will link to Patreon. So for those of you who support the show, head over there now and get your bonus, where I'm going to be talking all about Consenticle, a consent game that is all about helping a human and a tentacled alien to navigate a super hot mutual sexual experience. So we'll hear more about their story and all of the incredible tasks and activities that you negotiate that are on the cards, and how you build trust and satisfaction and have release. So patreon.com/sexgetsreal to support the show or to check out your bonus. And of course, if you have questions, comments, thoughts, go to sexgetsreal.com and use the contact form there. I love hearing from all of you. And I have loved spending these past couple of months getting caught up on so many of your questions and emails. So apologies. Some of you have been waiting a year to get your question answered. So I am working my way through. And I also have a whole bunch of guests that I've been working with. Virgie Tovar is going to be on the show in a couple of weeks. We recorded a while back, but we're waiting to release the episode until her book publishes, or book gets launched in August, and a handful of other really rad people. So I'm just going to keep answering your questions. And then in the fall, we're going to have so many awesome interviews. I'm so excited. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I will talk to you next week. Bye.